creative and it's an instrument to use of this surprise. While there's, yeah, the length capacity is kind of length of even things that I use. That just is getting to
you said you have decided I was so interested in these songs. Just to make two comments to this discussion, one of the things that somebody was talking about, you know, what are rights, and we also have other human rights that are also commodified, and that they're also, you know, private sector involvement. But like what somebody was saying, it depends if we decide that you have free access to it, or that you have to pay for it, and then we subsidize your free access to it. The second thing I'd like just to stress is that this discussion about what are being free good or commodity, what you're in economic terms is an economic good. Okay, there's no way around it. It's a private economic good. The issue is that until the 80s, most governments, because of the conception they had of water, the society they ran and organized, decided to provide it as a social good, which means they subsidized its supply. Either they didn't charge for it, or they charged very little money, and they took the bill that the taxes would pay to do it. With the neoliberal economic paradigm, the idea is everything is not working because government is involved. And so there's a retraction of the government in this idea of marketization. Private sector start charging. And that is new. That is very recent. I mean, unless we look in France, which is the only one that had private sector involvement for such a long time, and maybe in the U.S. at the very beginning that they started with private and collective associations of citizens, everywhere in the world, I mean, in 2000, in Australia, in some cities, major cities, capital states, there was no water meters in the houses. Okay? You go and rent a house, and me, as you know, a stupid European, said, well, where should I go to the water company, you know, to sign a contract? Oh, no, the water's always running. You don't have a contract, even if there's nobody there. And this is very recent. So I think that this discussion should also put that in perspective. I'm just trying to be the optimist. we're not doomed to this, saying we can't do anything about it, okay? Sorry. There are two people there that raised their hands before we stopped. These two gentlemen here on the right. Yeah, you one behind. Yeah, these two first, yes. And then one of them.
Thank you. Well, I guess to make some comments based on my own background. I'm African, from origin, with a lot of part of origin, living with a lot of water. But I have some difficulties in accepting some comments because, for example, this image you have there is a very usual image in the suburbs of all the cities in Mauritania. And this man is sending water. Okay, the service. So that is service in the suburbs and where people are being food. Mm-hmm. So they are paying for it. They are paying the service for water. Right? So it is not subsidized, you know, the man goes to the public fountain, it makes the water of the world to collect the water, and it goes to sell it for the houses. This is one level. The other level is there is needs from water companies, national, generally national water companies, owned by the states, and are sending their services and sewage and drinking water. And they are obviously more rich people, medium, high class population. And also talking about the involvement of companies, I'm looking for one of the two major multinational water treatment companies. And this year we are talking about this year, began the construction of a huge water treatment plant in Mauritania. So I don't agree that they are not seeing some economic interest for engaging in this concept. Is about $250 million. So if they are making it, it means that they have some kind of profits. In fact, they wouldn't do it. And the involvement of this huge international Western company also is in Morocco, as we speak, in Algeria, in Egypt, in Libya, in Senegal, all the water companies work to print dams, and normally they are contracted by the national water companies. And these are not private projects. So this is a private privatization. Of course, the states understand that if they don't supply or don't improve water quality, access water, clean water, by sea treatment or drinking water supply, they will have other problems more serious, like health problems. As we know, the majority of the diseases in the poor world, in the developed countries, are diseases waterborne. So they know that if they don't treat it, if they don't supply quality water, they will have to spend more money to solve the problem of health care. So we must think of all about this when we talk about this question of human rights access.
I must say that I really share the perspective that was made by Manuel in the beginning about the difficulty which is to assume that the private approach, private sector approach, would be a panacea for all these issues of water supply. I know about all this blindness of the market share perspective, in fact, and also the fact that if the need for efficiency, looking for efficiency, often leads a lot of people blind. So it's also blind. But now the question which really arises after that, the whole issue of private or non-private is about the right and the price. It is indeed the fact that one cannot ignore that there's a service being provided at less costs. I mean, and this is probably even easier to look at. This gentleman here mentioned about this picture, that there's a service being provided there by the man in Duncan. And if you go to rural areas, you know, that's even more clear. Even in rural areas, one would be surprised, you know, the ability or even the willingness that people would have to pay for water. You find them paying 6 to 10 times more the actual fare. The fee that is supposed to be charged. Now, the question is, if it is a human right, how then we go around and say, okay, it is a human right, but it must be paid for? It has a contradiction there. Because the way I see it, even if you put a pump in a village of 200 people, it will run down, and in 2 years, if you don't collect some money to keep it and maintain it and operate it properly, it will be collapsed. So would it not be better, actually, to put a price on the water, ensure that you collect it, manage it, and sustain the operation for 5 or 10 years? And this is like one very small example. You know, if you bring it up to scale, and then you have to big companies, either private or public. So my question here is really how to deal, on one hand, with the perspective which I even share, that the private market, the pure market approach, is indeed blind to social needs, and on the other hand, the need to maintain, operate, and even increase, expand the network, services being provided, especially in the states that often don't have the capital, and in some cases even technical capacity to put their own money. Some African countries do that. They do have the money, but most countries actually don't have the money to put up front and say, hey, we pay for it and nobody else needs to pay for it. So all to go around these two issues that seem to be in competition, really.
Thank you for I'm Gabor from Tunisia. There is a company for the distribution of water. Two technical questions for the speakers. How we can measure the willingness to pay? And if there is cases of price politics, or prices referred to willingness to pay? And the second question about the 20 liter per day per person. How is it fixed?
Yes, I'm very clear. Thank you. So, any questions about that too? Who knows? I would like to address the committee. I think we should distinguish this discussion, that it's very complex. issue of needed use, because we'll have women there using water to satisfy the needs of the citizens that apparently don't have is satisfied by the way they should look. It means that the state or the public authorities are not accomplishing their role. And so I think that in water, sometimes we mix these things. One thing is using water to produce something as an economic use, or we need water to survive. And this is a completely different way of thinking about water. And we should think who is responsible for satisfying one or the other, and what are costs included, because if you mix everything and say you have to recover all costs, if you need to survive the water, you have to pay, and if you sell it for this informal water, you have to pay, and you treat it in the same way as we are dealing with this in European Union, that's okay. We are misunderstanding everything, I think, and forgetting about the role of the public authorities in the state that is satisfied in the first place, and needs persons. And the second note I'd like to address is the complexity of something that we all talk about. What is the situation of some countries? Water doesn't exist alone. Water is linked with land and with other sources. So I think that we shouldn't never think about if one country has water and the other has no water. It's how they use water. Because maybe they had and they lost it, or they exported it, or they misused it. Because water is never something alone. And if you really think about water services or what you were referring, you're selling the pipes or the treatment or the chlorinated inside water. And in nature, in pure terms, doesn't exist anymore. It's the most virtual entity that you can think of. So it's really the way you are looking at water in relating with other resources, with the countries, with the territory, the land uses, urban uses, massive uses. And of course, we are not going to solve all this today in this room, but this is one of the challenges that we have in this seminar, and I think it's really a lot of food for thought, as you said.
So back to the table, of that number one, thank you. Another contradiction between human rights and the reality of something. I don't know if this answers your question, but personally, I respect the fact that, and now we can't, since water is perceived, or we want to perceive it as a human right, we can't talk about basic amount of water, for example. Let's say that to agree with the fact that something has to be paid and we cannot pay losses for the finances of the municipalities of the city, at least we should talk about equality of, equal access to the resources. So I'm not concerned, for example, about the fact that in South Africa we really stress this idea of the importance of basic amount of water. People should be satisfied with this little amount of water because, yeah, things actually go in some way and we cannot commit to lose money. And then, talking about also the food that we tend to use, it is, the idea of 20 liters of water free of charge is based on the idea that every person in the household should consume or can consume for all his needs 25 liters a day. And it is based on the average figure of 8 members, a household of 8 members, made of 8 members. But this is really the survival level for also for the
if you simplify in South Africa, somehow below 6 kilo, that the amount is what is a human right, and above, it's a community. So it's a conception of the South African government going roughly is like, it's a human right only to survive, and then after it's a community and you can use it and as a community with markets and something like this. That's the idea, I see from South Africa. And the second point, and getting back to your interesting question about this guy saying water, what is saying water, and the price we did for some surveys that how the price is built by this guy, where this is not the guy at the pump who is saying, he's only carrying water, and the income of this guy is very, very low. And as a matter of fact, like, the poor people pay much more for water than the rich people, and that's overall in Southern Africa. And the idea, if you go back to the end of the 80s and why we asked a food cost recovery of water, is that when my low water meter reached a part of Khartoum, for instance, on German transport, the rich were paid nothing and the poor people were paid a lot. So it was inverted, as we said, inverted cross subsidies. So that's why they say, okay, someone has to pay the food cost of water, and they inverted it in South Africa so the poor pay less and the rich pay more. But still, the only idea they have that solidarity must be only between end consumers. So the notion of disparity is that the rich consumers are paying for the poor consumers. That's their more idea. And the last point that we make is that, that's the idea of below 6 meters, it's 6 meters, a human right, and above it's a community, and so the rich have to pay more for getting more access to the community. For willingness to pay, there are some studies made in different countries, and household surveys saying how much you are willing to pay for this community. And many of these people are willing to pay quite a lot for water, like 50% of their income. In a Mali or some part of Khartoum, they're paying a lot because they consider that water is irreplaceable. So they cut all the rest and they keep money for water. So we must pay very high, and there are no such things as filter of campaign. And so you know, it's a WHO, it's from the 25 years, it's coming from the WHO.
Okay, so
Bruce,
let's start some of the questions that have been answered. So I want to, we talk about willingness to pay, I think capability to pay is much more important. People are willing to pay, but sometimes they don't have money, they don't have money to pay, and that's difficult. But for the market, it's the same thing. They're not money, they're not kind of traditional markets. Now let me talk about the thing about the cost. Yeah, there is costs in providing water to everybody, so somebody has to pay this. That happens with everything. Do you know here any human right that doesn't have cost? Election costs. Should we privatize elections? That's not cost. And it's very expensive. Probably even more expensive than just giving water. I mean, let me tell you this. True free elections need a lot of things. We need trial, we need courts, we need education, we need free press, we need political parties, we need a lot of things. And that's probably even more costly than to bring water to everybody. So the question is put in a different way. Everything has costs. So sometimes you pay in different ways. The question is, with elections, it's a public good, it's not a public good. But you could privatize it. Some people don't even think about it. As I said, in England, 2 centuries ago, you could only vote if you had some income, or if you paid taxes. And you could even have more votes if you paid more taxes, which means that it was not even universal suffrage. So you could say, just want any human right into a party, but then it wouldn't be humanized anymore. Because the human right to vote is universal. It's not universal. If I'm not allowed to vote arbitrarily, it is no longer a human right. It is no longer a democracy. So that's why I put water as a human right. Water is a human right. Then, and only then, markets cannot act. Because they're not willing to do so much. So now for the thing about the salinization, desalinization of the facility in Marshall. they're doing it because obviously they can sell water and get money. But I didn't say that it was not profitable to privatize water service and to distribute water as their money. It is not profitable to distribute water as a human. That's not profitable. Because it doesn't have money. You can sell it to people that have money to buy it. And if the market is small, you make small profits in terms of absolute terms. But that does not say anything about the relative rates of profit. But if you have to give water to everybody, universal coverage, that's something different. It is not profitable for companies to get universal coverage. And water as a human right supposes universal coverage. If you're not allowed to have water because you cannot pay, it is not a human right. If you don't do that with a vote, you don't say like you can actually do it very easily. For example, you go to a voting poll and say like, I want to check out, did you pay taxes? Have you paid the parking ticket? You're not allowed to. That's easy to do. Technically it's easy to do, but if you don't do it, you don't even think about doing it anymore. But you have to pay for this. So why do you do that with water? So it's a choice. What I'm saying is if you choose to be a human right, then it's a binding obligation. And you cannot treat it as a human right. Even if you could treat it as a human right, you shouldn't treat it as a human right. And then markets are unable to do that, because markets are unable to provide courts and elections and etc. Because it's not you cannot pay the money for it, so you cry out companies. But for the moment, water is not a human right. In practice, it's not a human right. Of course, it's not. It's a human right. But the question is, if it is, because of the human right, which is going to be this human right, has already been deduced from the human rights proclamation that it is a human right, then soon it will become a binding obligation. Then you have to think about water distribution in a different way than that.
I just like to make a comment to what the lady has just said about my observation. Part of my studies have been done on international water issues, and one of the things is that countries have put pressure to avoid water. When I'm talking about water, it's not bottled water. Bottled water is a commodity. It's internationally, it's domestically, but the commodification of bulk water, this means getting water in huge quantities in one country to supply a city in another country. There have been contracts to this effect, and governments at the last minute stopped them, saying that for environmental reasons they couldn't do it, saying off the record that they didn't want it to be under the WTO as any other commodity, because then they could control it. And the interesting thing here is the connection with human rights. At the same time this was happening, the legal comment of the UN on the human rights water had been issued, and one of the countries that I was working on voted against, and that was Canada. And I was very puzzled, because Canada supposedly usually doesn't vote against human rights. And their answer, off the record, was, if we allow it to be a human right internationally, the United States of America can ask us more water than the one that is already flowing into their country. And we don't agree that they should have it because of the uses they're giving to water. But that would be very complex because the people in Los Angeles or in Nevada are saying, I don't have water in my house, despite that it was wasted, you know, in the fields or whatever. And I think that's very interesting, the complexity and how governments have chosen to act or not in this respect. So that's why I made that comment. Sorry. Any other questions, comments? Thank you so much for your participation. It's been very interesting. Thank you.